comfortable and let our journey begin as we meet the hosts, internationally acclaimed mediums, Nick and Sophie Avery.
And welcome to Spirit's Work, the show that's designed to stretch your mind and broaden your understanding about life on Earth, life after death, and life in other dimensions. Now, each week through our connection with our spirit friends, we discuss various topics of interest and take great pleasure in listening to those who continue to walk with us and watch over us. In the most natural way, we are able to cross the divide between our physical world and the non-physical world, when my husband Mick deep trance channels an enlightened spirit called Gregory Hay, who has access to great knowledge and wisdom. And this week's show is part six of our energy topic. So if you'd like to join us with a question to Gregory, then it's a toll-free call. And in the U.S., the number is 877-876-5227. In Canada, it's 888-815-9756. International callers, it's not toll-free. It's 001-530-876-3222.
Well, hello. I'm Mick Avery. As well as Spirit's Work on bbsradio.com every Monday at 7 p.m. and every Thursday at 1 p.m. PST, we have another radio show which is called Spirit Teaching, and you can hear that on artistfirst.com every Tuesday at 7 p.m. PST. If you'd like to know more about us, our books, book an Akashic reading, or go and visit our website, which is www.spirit-teaching.com and also at spiritsworkradio.com. What we're able to do as spirit mediums is offer you the spirit world's perspective on the nature of our existence. And when I go into deep trance, Gregory Hay, who is the spokesperson for an educational group in the spirit world called the White Cloud Group, will borrow my body for the whole show. And I won't know about anything else that happens because my spirit and my consciousness are transported to somewhere else. And like I say, do have a look at our website for a better understanding, of how we work and what we do. And I'm going to say goodbye for this week. It's only going to take hopefully a few seconds or so for Gregory to come through. And Sylvie's going to be obviously giving her energy for that process and looking after you and going to be dialoguing with Gregory, and hopefully so will you. So don't forget to call us on this topic. Okay, thanks very much, then. Goodbye.
Okay. Gregory, who is going to be speaking to you, had an Earth life 300 years ago, but has continued to learn and evolve in the spirit world. And now he comes back to share his wisdom with us for our benefit. The White Cloud Group, whom he represents, were formed to bring us knowledge that will hopefully steer us toward a more peaceful and harmonious future. They are made up of all kinds of scientific minds and scholars from all walks of life, as well as ordinary people. The information we bring is without religious bias or political persuasion, and we believe in everyone's right to their own views and beliefs. Excuse me. I'd just like to take this opportunity to explain to you who haven't heard about our Akashic readings. If you'd like to go on our site, which is www.spirit-teaching.com, you can look up our Akashic reading site, and there you will discover that you can book yourself a reading, which is basically about your book of life, your eternal life in the spirit world, and wherever else it is that you've been, basically. Everything you've seen, sensed, touched, felt, done, is in your Akashic records. And what will happen is if you want to have a reading with Gregory, you will find out who your soul group is and who your doorkeeper is, who your doorkeeper walks with you every step of your journey on this physical earth, okay? You will find out about your gifts of spirit and who your guides are and that sort of thing. It's a spiritual journey that you can take. We do phone readings, and we do audio readings if you can't actually get in touch personally. And there's all sorts of different lengths and prices on there. So you will get a CD or you will get the Akashic reading by electronic transfer on the same day to your laptop. So you can make your own or your computer so that you can make your own CD from it. Okay, so do have a look. It's the Akashic reading site on spirit-teaching.com, spirit page rather. Okay. Welcome, Gregory.
With love and light and peace and energy, always be with you, friend.
Thank you. Well, last week it was exciting because you had obviously planned to start talking about something, and this is what's so great about this show. Somebody phoned in straight away, and we had such great questions that it took us through a whole show, didn't it?
Yes.
And we had great fun, and that was great.
Yes. Yes.
So this week, presumably, you want to continue your talking about, I think you started talking about gemstones and crystals, didn't you? Energy from the earth and that sort of thing.
Yes, well, we really do need to understand the energy of the earth. This really, not necessarily from our own point of view, although it does relate very much to the spirit world. The point is that we have to say, first of all, that many human beings having a physical life presently, they have belief systems and faith based upon the presumption that spirit originate and are in some way controlled by the earth plane. I'm saying this, my dear friend, because it comes to our attention, really, that many faiths and understandings are really, in a sense, limiting the sensitivity of spirit and the actual scope of existence. Because, after all, the earth is only so many millions of years old, and in actual fact, your spirit, inherently, as part of God, is much older than that, and doesn't actually come from the earth. The point that you have a continual existence means to say not necessarily that you are beholden to the earth plane as a spirit being, but in fact that you have journeys in many different places, in many different realms, nothing to do with the earth itself. So it really is a question that many people actually falter over, quite simply because they think that humanity and spirit itself is tied to the earth, when in fact it isn't. The earth spirit, on the other hand, is an entirely different matter. And I have to say that as spirit beings ourselves, and as yourself, it comes to mind that you as a spirit are in fact attracted to the earth at this time. It's part of the reason why you are having a human physical life experience, after all. So, when we understand of ourselves a little bit, perhaps to do with our own energy as spirit beings or as physical beings as well, when we're having that life, it means to say that we must also understand our own feelings and our existence within as being a part of the earth. Because, after all, the physical condition that you have comes from the earth. It comes from the evolutionary state that the earth has come to at this point in time. This does not mean to say that when you have someone who is intensely negative or hostile, that is a negative trait of the earth. That, of course, is something of the decision-making and of the judgment that comes upon the individual. The individual, that is, the spirit of earth, does not have a judgment, does not have that form of conscious state that I am going to punish people or I am going to punish animals by my activity and then perhaps create some kind of earthquake or natural disaster. Natural disasters happen and occur because of tectonic plate movement, which is a part of the systematic way in which the planet itself evolves and changes and alters, just in the same way that you as human beings change and alter. When you are looking at situations to do with earth magic, or that which comes from the earth in the shape of minerals and materials, you are actually looking at aspects of control which have come about due to the mineralization. And what actually happens in this mineralization is, of course, it has many inherent properties, each occasioning upon whatever the actual chemical value happens to be at the time and the way certain chemicals come together. All mineralization, and it, you could say, in a sense, all life, comes about through chemicalization of certain properties of physical state, which then allow the properties of the evolutionary state to take a hold, combining those properties of chemical in order to produce the property we know as physical life. Otherwise, you would quite clearly see that wood obviously comes from living form. It's decayed or past living physical tissue. And what happens to it is that it becomes crystallized and it has its own inherent properties that it carries. I'm using this really as an example, which is subsequent to many, many forms of mineralization. I'm not talking necessarily about solid objects of metals, heavy metals and that kind of thing. We'll go into that in a moment. So if you take a situation of a material such as wood, you are looking at the cell structure, the decayed cell structure that was once living tissue, carrying cells, carrying fluids, carrying energy, as it grew upon the planet's surface. This is a situation of the exchange of life. And as such, each part of that exchange exuded and interacted with its spirit, because trees have spirit. They have a conscious state. I know some scientists would no doubt quite laugh hysterically at this statement. But it is a truth. Plants reciprocate energy. I'm not talking about their breathing. I'm not talking about the way in which they take in carbon dioxide and breathe out oxygen in the daytime, or whatever they do at night in exchange of that, which is, of course, to do something in the reverse. But actually, they still breathe out oxygen as well. They don't only breathe out carbon dioxide. So the situation is that when you have a tree which is taking in carbon in its way of energy exchange and then breathing out oxygen in the daytime, you are actually looking at it bringing and utilizing that carbon in the form of its cell structure to give it strength, to give it properties that it has which are inherent upon that particular species. And of course this depends upon its genetics and how these genetics alter and change gradually through the lifetime experience of the tree. However, also what is happening here is that you are having the interaction of the tree itself, the life form, interacting with the cell structure of the tree, and of course interchanging its gaseous experience, its chemical experience, with the environment. So it's a spirit having a physical life. This means to say that much of its imprint of that life is embedded within the very timber that becomes the degeneration of that physical being. And what then happens is that when the physical being eventually passes, and of course, as you may or may not know, trees actually pass on their spirit to another. They don't come back to the spirit world. They actually continue their form, in as much as in the last generations that it sheds in seeds, its spirit actually transfers into that seed, and it carries on its life in that way. It's a very unique structure to do with trees. So most of the trees that you actually have on your planet are millions of years old in their spirit form, which is why it is that trees themselves have an immense calm. It isn't just to do with their structure. It's not just to do with the air within its leaves or the space within its branches or the beautiful canopy that it occupies or creates around you for you to shelter within. If you actually go up to a tree and you wrap your arms around it as best you can, and you actually form with that tree, you actually blend with that tree, with that energy, you will discover something really beautiful, and that is it has no opinion, no degradation upon you, that it is a very giving being. And it is that way because of its ancient history as a spirit being.
What if the tree doesn't have a chance to drop seeds, to regenerate? Where does its spirit go then if it just dies and doesn't have a chance to procreate, as it were?
Well, it does actually return to the spirit world, and that will be the state of it.
Right. Okay.
The situation, however, then, what I am saying here is that what you would find is that the wood from that tree would still harbor its spirit memory and the conscious memory that it had of all those years of standing and being a part of the environment and giving to the environment as a part of the lungs of the planet.
And if it's a small tree that only doesn't even live to the next season, you know, just a whip.
Yes, a whip, yes.
Does it still have its ancestral heritage?
Oh, yes, absolutely so, yes, yes. What I'm saying really is in the general norm of how a tree exists and how it continues to procreate, it will be that the very essence of tree comes, in a sense, continues full circle and continues its lifetime experience if and when, shall we say, it's in the final throes of its life, like an oak tree, and it sheds its oak leaves every year, and its acorns, of course, they actually, what happens to them is that it gradually and gradually diminishes because, you know, an oak tree actually takes a very long time to pass. And in fact, of course, it is to say as well that many trees, even if they're on their last legs, as it were, and they keel over, and they can actually spring to life again.
Really?
As often can happen. Oh, yes.
Oh, well, from the base?
Well, no, not from the base. But very often there may well be parts of the tree which actually in its decaying process, then parts of it spring to life and grow roots. How often have you seen, perhaps, the possibility of a tree when it has fallen naturally and that it has actually begun sprouting roots at a branch or something like that, and then continues to grow and grows up into a new tree. It's not something which is a truism of all varieties of tree, of course.
No.
Now, and where this was going,
yes.
I expect you're wondering, but where this is going is to say that, so what you have then is in wood exists part of the spirit of the tree. And also, of course, part of the spirit of those who may have been around the tree or who could have lived in the tree at the time. And if you are very sensitive, hypersensitive, you can actually pick up the contact of the tree with various animals and birds and creatures that lived upon it and within it. You can actually pick up images and senses of this being. Now, what this has to do with mineralization is that you are not to forget that there are many situations of physical life which end up in decay, which then actually turn into some kind of mineralization, usually because of oxidization or something like that. Some form of chemical reaction, pressure from other soils which happen to be upon it or on top of it. Maybe it is something whereby a vegetation turns into a marsh or something like that, and then eventually turns into a peat field. You may have a situation where a great many trees together over a very long period of millions of years, and the pressure of soils which are washed down or washed upon them, that these situations gradually develop so that it becomes coal. And of course, part of the pathway of coal is lead, is uranium.
Mm-hmm.
And also, of course, then you have other forms of mineralization which come off from that. A mixture of metals, for example. But no, we're not straying from there. We will continue upon this pathway for the moment, because I want you to understand that how it is that certain forms of spirit can be inherent within specific minerals that you find, like coal or just in wood, in a piece of furniture, a table, shall we say, will actually have the very presence of where it existed as a wooden form. And even if the legs were from somewhere else, it will still have a part of its presence there. This then gives you an intonation of how it is that even in crystallization, you may have properties passed on by living life form into those properties quite simply because they were there present at the time of their forming. Or perhaps the crystallization took place from some living tissue. Oil, for example, all comes from dinosaurs. It is all to do with the living tissue of dinosaur. So it means to say that you have a certain specific situation, a condition, which is present in that particular mineral. And the fluidity of it is something which, of course, is a part of the pathway of the fuel of the earth, if you like. But it's not to say that it was brought together so that man would have be able to drive motor cars and machinery and all of that. After all, it's virtually said by many people that the oil upon your planet is almost impossible to exhaust, quite simply because the decay and detritus is a continuous process. However, there were only dinosaurs once, and only so many. So if you actually look at all the dinosaurs that were ever present, even if it was over millions and millions of years, the state of play will come that eventually, even giving the lifetime of one dinosaur being between 30 years and perhaps 120 years in the shape of Diplodocus and Brontosaurus, so you are actually looking at different life forms and they're blending not their spirit, but their energy forms, their presence of consciousness, and how those consciousness actually had a form and a memory upon that liquid. Similarly, you have the situation with wood, whereby its spirit presence is still leaving its conscious image. And at times, as physical beings, you may well be able to actually make communion with that spirit presence of a solid object like a table or a chair. When you actually marvel at something, the beautiful that has been made out of that piece of wood, you are actually also glorying in the condition of the wood itself, and the tree is very thankful of your praise of its existence.
Can it bring you, if you furnish your house with wooden objects that are made from a place that is negative and where the trees are very unhappy?
Yes.
So can that affect the, you know, the, like, I don't want to use the word karma, the luck of the people in the house? Will that have a bearing on the ambience of the house, the energy in the house, if the whole place is, you know what I mean?
Yes, a very interesting point, my dear friend. And I would say that people who practice feng shui would actually feel an essence or an energy sense of a particular piece of furniture and whether it is actually of a vibrancy and the quality of that vibrancy. Mm. The point is not forgetting that this situation of spirit information is in fact quite similar to many other people who are highly sensitive and have a very good ability to structure conditions within a home life environment, a harmonic setting, and be aware of the presence of certain structures and their possibility of whether those structures were, whether that the plants at the time, the trees at the time, were in a happy existence or whether they were living in fear of their existence.
So it could make a difference because obviously,
yes.
I always believed that, you know, if you live in something made so of a natural quality like wood, then the ambience of the home should be quite beautiful, really, if you create the right environment yourself within it.
Yes, that is
but
very
But it could
true.
Make a difference. It all depends where the wood is from, really.
In a sense, yes. For example, it may well be that the mahogany that has been stripped from the Amazon rainforest looks very beautiful. But at the same time, it will be that the mahogany stripped from an Amazon rainforest would actually far rather be in the Amazon rainforest.
Is there some sort of karma that goes with a tree in that respect, in that case? You know, for, in consequence of the people who ultimately end up with it?
I expect that humanity would really wish of that being the case, my friend. But to say that there would actually be hostility from that presence, I would have to say that it is genuinely that human beings do not pick up that form of hostility, so may well not recognize it. And indeed, particularly if the people who are using that particular item of furniture are particularly materialistic, then it will be that they won't feel anything.
And presumably, if you, I mean, the karma will be from knowingly buying and using that form of wood.
Absolutely.
You know, once you know, then that's, if you don't know, then that's one thing. If you do know, that really is karma. How can I explain it?
Coming to bite you in the knee,
yeah,
really.
Well, it could, couldn't it? Really?
Absolutely so, yes. Quite so. So the point we're making here is that when you are looking at anything, you have to understand that just because you are holding a mineral in your hand and it has been shaped into a crystal, perhaps by the pressures of the earth or the pressures of its environment that helped to form it, you are actually looking at certain conditions whereby perhaps it could be that although it is a part of the earth and it may well have been blessed to have finally made the sunlight again rather than being impressed or oppressed rather, should I say, in the strata of some other rock, it is obvious that humanity has always seen various forms of gemstone in the historical light as having this or that property. Wood, in effect, has a very beautiful property, particularly if it comes from some yielding place that is very harmonic and deeply set spiritually.
Mm-hmm.
You would then find, in fact, that the piece of wood of which this object has been made from would actually, in a sense, speak volumes to you. In a sense, would bring about a great deal of harmonic layering and beautify your life by its mere presence. This is a very true statement of which I speak. The next thing to understand then is that this similarity between the wood's conscious activity as it had been, as it had brought about in its own physical life, and its transfer of that consciousness as a memory to the wood itself once it becomes a solid physical object, is something similar to other aspects of Mother Earth, of the Gaia effect of its presence, and the way in which itself does not dictate to other forms and structures, but that other forms and structures of crystallization are not actually bringing forward just the properties of itself and its own inherent qualities, but are also bringing forward the properties of the spirit of the earth itself as well. And of course, that spirit, when you interact with it, what is it that it's telling you? Is it bringing about something of its own property? I could count millions of people who could actually pick up a stone, a piece of quartz, or any form of crystal that you would care to mention,
mm-hmm.
and would actually pick up this stone and look at it and say, yes, very nice, and put it down again,
mm-hmm.
and would not feel anything else coming from that piece of stone. Even people who are sensitive, highly sensitive spiritual people. Just because they're spiritual people doesn't mean to say that they have read all the books there are to read upon the sequences and products and apparent ambient qualities that various stones and crystals appear to produce. This, of course, means to say, friend, that if you actually close your eyes and hold a particular stone, is it actually really revealing its quality to you? Or are you similarly bringing this up as a facet of mind?
Or your connection to the earth spirit.
Or your connection to the earth spirit.
The connection with that spirit to your spirit.
Absolutely so.
And invoking a sensation.
And invoking a sensation. That is true. It's not to say that one crystal has a particular property, but not others. Because in a sense, because it's a part of the earth, all crystals share certain specific properties, because as a part of being the earth.
And what the
earth is made up of different thousands and thousands of different minerals. And the area
that this particular crystal came from will make a difference, though, won't it?
Of course, that as well. Yes, absolutely so. So if you have certain gemstones which are mined from a specific area, does it mean to say then that those gemstones are particularly giving? What if the people who mined them were actually slaves?
Well, that was going to be my next question. Yes.
What then? What do you have then in your respect of being, shall we say, a fine woman, and you have been given these beautiful diamonds, and they come from South Africa, from some poor black person or collection of black people who have actually been stuck in a mine for years upon years with poor wages and even running the risk perhaps of dying there because of their lack of safety? Does it mean to say that all of that comes out within the gemstone itself? Or is this a property of diamond which is only at the behest of the eye of the beholder? Is it perhaps something which is just coherent from that aspect, from that point of view? Oh, says the woman, that's a very beautiful diamond. Or the man. Whatever, I'm not being genderistic here. I'm saying this as an actual formidable property. Diamonds happen not to carry situations of energy from the properties of people. Not the diamond itself.
Well, I was going to say that. We don't particularly talk of gemstones as having a property like we do crystals.
Well,
you know, like something that can make you open your third eye or make you more...
I expect you could probably find people that would say that.
Well, yes, it would open your eyes. Hang on a second, anyway. If anybody would like to join us with a question to Gregory about our interesting topic today about earth energies, then you're listening to Gregory Hay being channeled by Deep Trance Medium Mick Avery, and he will answer them. The number to call is toll-free in the U.S. is 877-876-5227. In Canada, it's 888-815-9756. And international callers, it's not toll-free, but it's only a quick call. 001-530-876-3222. Yes, so how does that work with all of these different... if you go to the jewelers, for instance...
Yes.
You don't get the same reception or the same feelings or the same sales pitch like you would if you went into a crystal shop.
No, indeed not. Or if you were looking to buy spiritual bling, what does that mean? Does it mean to say that you are actually garlanding yourself from gemstones that were mined from slavery or something like that? What do you term in slavery to be in a state of whether that actually produces an energy which is of poorer quality toward a gemstone? How does it impact upon it? Well, as I'm saying, with diamonds, it doesn't actually impact upon it at all. There is no specific energy in diamonds. It is actually to do rather with the energy which people put upon it when they're cutting it.
Mm-hmm.
The diamond itself, don't forget, comes from incredible, incredible external pressure. That's what creates a diamond. And in effect, what you have there is a small collection of minerals, silica, which actually come together to help to form the structure of the chemical property of a diamond. And then, so what you're actually looking at, when you're looking, viewing a diamond in a shop, is that you're actually seeing the facets of the diamond as it has been cut. Nothing to do with the property of the diamond or who it was that actually originally dug it out. You will not sense that. You will not have any sensation to do with that property. Quite simply because the property inherent within a physical being doesn't actually stick to a diamond at all. Now, what about then when you psychometrize a diamond ring? Yes, but you're psychometrizing the gold. You're psychometrizing the layering of consciousness that has been impregnated upon the ring because of the wearer, not the diamond itself. It is never the diamond itself.
Well, that's interesting. And how? What about gold? I mean, so that's dug out of the ground.
Yes, but the situation with gold is that it actually very often attracts or allows the conscious activity of physical beings to actually impact upon it. That's why, friend, that if you have a gold ring that comes from someone, it actually has inherent properties. And the reason why it has inherent properties, that sometimes these can be very positive, and at other times, of course, they can be extremely negative, depending upon the wellness of the individual who wore it. If you have a person who had a happy life, then the energies coming from their auric field are going to have an impact and impregnate, or rather, rather, should I say, layer upon. It's not really impregnation. It's because actually, if you then cut the gold ring up and or melted it down or something, you would no longer necessarily actually feel the presence of the being as it was when it was in its original ring form upon the finger. Why this happens is because it's the actual conscious energy and the auric energy that came from the physical being which then sticks to the gold. And it's the same with silver or platinum or any of these other, so say, precious metals which have existed upon the earth for just countless billions of years.
So you can change the energy of a gold ring?
Yes.
By melting it. Can you change the energy of something like that? I'm not talking about crystals.
Yes.
You can. You can change the energy of gold and diamonds.
Well, I'm
okay.
saying, really, what I'm saying, friend, is that you dissipate the energy
okay.
of the wearer when you melt down
okay.
the gold ring.
What about if you don't melt it?
Well, I'm going to say that, but what you can do is that if you actually have been given a gold ring which feels like it has very negative properties,
mm-hmm.
perhaps because the wearer was divorced or went through some traumatic situation in the end of their life or whatever,
mm-hmm.
and then this then becomes part of the signature of the ring
mm-hmm.
and part of the signature energy of it, it means to say that what you can do is you can actually take that ring and alter the energy.
Okay?
And what you do is that you would create a very deep harmonic layer, really to do with the loving energy from yourself and, of course, with the spirit world as well. And what you would do is actually bring about this energy in a certain figured way. I'll talk about that in a moment.
Okay. Hello, caller. Who's speaking?
Hi, this is Susan. I have a story
Hi.
About a golden ring that was melted down, and this was someone that I lived with, and he surprised me, thought he was going to make me really happy and propose to me with this golden ring that he had melted down and made for me. And I didn't want to be with him anymore. And I cried for 8 hours. I didn't want to tell him why, you know. But I just couldn't stop crying, you know. I didn't like this ring. Even though he had melted it down, I just didn't want to be with him anymore.
Yes, yes.
Oh,
I understand.
How ironic was that?
Yes.
That's
yes.
all I wanted to share.
Oh, thanks for
well,
sharing that,
so.
Susan. Thank
yes,
you.
Thank you. Thank you so
okay,
much.
Goodbye.
Thank you. And so, you see, quite simply, if you have these, really, in a sense, one could say you should never melt a gold ring. Really, because you can actually change that energy that was within it. You can actually also, with the psychometrization of the ring, you can make very good contact with the wearer, with the previous wearer, and actually perhaps help them resolve some of the issues, so then returning the energy of the ring into something beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
After all, gold rings are usually about the union of people. So it tends to be that happens to be a very happy situation, a very loving and giving situation, because it's in a giving environment that you are actually giving rings and receiving them, and that is the whole process of it. So if you have a situation then where you have a ring which has a negative feel to it, then you would identify with the fact that obviously, it was beautified to begin with, but something happened in that night. And therefore, I say to you that it would be most obvious for people to actually say prayers over the ring, to commune with the spirit world over this particular piece of metal, so that perhaps making a communion with the spirit of the wearer, of the previous wearer, or whoever had originated it.
So, but if you wanted to just change the energy, you would do, smudge the ring or something like
yes,
that?
Yes, absolutely so. Mm-hmm. Yes, you would use white sage. And perhaps one of the things that it may be required would be to actually to suspend the ring in a way of perhaps suspending it from a piece of cotton or something like that,
mm-hmm.
and allowing the spoke to go all the way over it, you see, so that you're not actually touching it.
I see.
You understand.
And then
so that if it's then suspended, you are actually not allowing your energy
upon
it.
Yeah, you're not touching it.
Yes. And so then you are not judging it either.
Okay.
You're not being a judger of that, making a judgment of that energy. You are just allowing the white sage and the smoke to create the union with spirit in this respect, and to, in a sense, be very most respectful to the spirit of the original wearer, perhaps. Mm. Or perhaps, of course, if it was a ring that was passed down from generation to generation, then you would actually have respect of those who had perhaps worn it, who didn't have a happy life.
Well, yes. On the other hand, you might have some jewelry handed down to you, or something like that, by somebody who had an absolutely wonderfully, brilliantly lucky, positive, loving life, and so that would make a difference to your life. Then you would gain the properties from that jewelry that they had.
Well, absolutely so. Yes, of course.
Not always negative, is it?
Oh no, I'm not suggesting that at all.
No.
I'm saying that in exactly the same way, it can be that if you have something which is very positive, has a very beautiful feel to it, perhaps then it will be something which will bring, in a sense, you are feeling part of the essence and energy of the previous wearer,
mm.
and their conscious ability, their conscious activity, the love that they created in their life, and the situation which brought about their life journey, that person's life journey, and you are relating to that. So it's something then which brings to you a very loving environment. I always feel that with such things as rings, engagement rings or gold rings or something like that, if it's something coming from, shall we say, a disharmonic home, like a divorce or something like that, then you really ought to actually give it a purity blessing before you actually get rid of it.
Yes, if you're going to pass it on. Absolutely.
Yes,
not to continue the negativity.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
Because then, in a sense, yes, because then, in a sense, you are being more thoughtful, as you say, and perhaps more caring towards someone else who may want to buy it.
Mm, I'm thinking that probably a lot of the time, the old rings that you get then can maybe more positive than the new ones that, like you say, have been mined by slaves and people in really bad conditions, just totally money-mad people.
Yes, quite.
Do you know what I mean?
Yes. And, of course, not all diamonds are mined. Many actually come from riverbeds and that kind
of
thing.
Yeah. So would you say, though, to do some sort of blessing or smudging on any piece of jewelry that you get?
Well, most certainly, I would say, yes, to a certain extent, I would say so, because whatever piece of jewelry that you buy has been mined. Everything is mined. And so, in a sense, I know that some rocks and that kind of thing can be picked up on the foreshore of a beach or whatever,
mm.
but generally, you will find that most crystal, for example, comes through a mining operation of one form or another. And it will be, absolutely, that there needs to be a great deal of respect for this situation and for the way in which you as a physical being are understanding that property. Now, I understand that some people might come up to perhaps a certain piece of crystal and say, oh, isn't that beautiful? And then start thinking and talking about its properties, which are supposed to be inherent within it,
mm-hmm.
as had been written down, or whatever properties they're supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
They are really illuminating to people's views of how they feel when that specific piece of chemicals that have been brought together the way that they are reacting to them. They're not actually giving off that much of an aura. As I say, you could have one person who has never ever seen a crystal before, or perhaps doesn't actually relate to them.
So why is this, though?
Well, I suppose you could say that those who are actually absolutely fascinated and that crystals dominate their lives, you could well say that perhaps their domination in their own life is really to do with how that crystal is, not necessarily how the crystal is responding to them, but how the person is responding to the crystal. Which came first, chicken or the egg? Was it the crystal or the person? The point is that many people then alter their own genetic code, their own morality, their own emotion and intuition, their own sensing, their own communion with their spirit in relation to the crystal. And what's happening to the crystal? It's responding in like kind because you are heaping your admiration upon it. And what's happening is that what you are doing, in fact, is you are sending your thoughts to the crystal. You are actually placing your thoughts upon it. You are increasing your auric vibration, which is in turn actually having an effect upon you as a physical being and upon your spirit and its relationship to you and to the crystal. So in terms of fact, point of fact, what you are doing is you are altering the vibration of the crystal by your own energy.
Okay, what about, we've only got a couple of minutes left, what about, are there certain areas of the world where certain crystals are mined or found or whatever that would affect the situation with these crystals, like, you know, you shouldn't bother with, sort of thing?
Oh, that you shouldn't bother with.
Well, or that you should, yes. I mean, are there spiritual areas, negative, actual areas of the planet that are better than others?
Yes,
that
well, I was
that.
Going to say, my dear friend, actually, certain areas of the planet, the Mojave Desert, a great deal of Arizona, and I'm trying to think of the other one that's next door to it.
Nevada?
Oh, yes, thank you very much, yes. And all of that area where many native peoples particularly have mined many forms of crystal and gemstone because it's something that has been very deep and deeply set within their culture.
Mm-hmm.
And it's exactly the same way as gold was something which was very something of an ornate structure to do with their own civilization.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So you're saying this is good or bad?
I'm saying really in a sense that in those situations what you are talking about is not just the gemstone itself, but it's to do with the human dignity and respect and human reactivity to certain specific gemstones that then tend to augment their properties into something else. So, in fact, what you're doing when you pick up a piece of topaz or something that's been mined by some native group, some indigenous peoples, to that area, and that it's something that they've done in a very loving way, and that they've created a great deal of spirituality about actually using that stone, then that is something which is going to be deeply embedded within the stone itself. Even though you may think, oh, well, it's just a piece of this or that, actually, for example, when you see these stones which are made into really beautiful ornate necklaces and that kind of thing, you just glow at the respect of it because you can see that there has been a great deal of spiritual humility brought to it.
Mm-hmm.
And in respect of this, it's much to do with the energy that's actually coming off it. If you actually have a crystal ball that's been made out of some form of quartz or whatever, what are you responding to if you are looking at it as a pathway of healing energy? Are you responding to that, or are you in fact using it as a placebo to accentuate your own spirituality and your own divine link with spirit?
Well, it's a
question that you must look at.
Well, we can expand on this topic anyway next time.
Yes,
absolutely.
Yes.
And whether opals are really unlucky. Okay, well, thank you, Gregory.
Absolutely. With love and light, God bless upon your journey, friend.
Thank you. Oh, we hope you've enjoyed the show. I'd just like to mention our website again, which is spirit-teaching.com. And thank you so much for listening. Thank you for your call, Suzanne. And do join us again on Monday and again on Thursday for another fun-packed show with Gregory and the Spirit World on Spirit's Work. My name is Sylvie Avery. And until next time, be peaceful, be positive, and focused on your goal, knowing that you're not alone in trying to create a better world. Bye.